This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
On Friday, September 22nd, the Norris Group proudly presented its 10th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. All proceeds from the event will benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event would not have been possible without the generous support of the following platinum partners: Housing Wire, Coach Fullerton, Coldwell Banker Town & Country, Property Radar, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club, Las Brisas Escrow, MVT Productions, Inland Empire Real Estate Investment Club, Realty 411, and White House Catering.
We've had a request. We're going to do an unscientific experiment, but this is the perfect group to do it. I'm going to ask anybody that owns at least two rental properties to stand up. It's a pretty good sampling. Now here's the question. So, no, you can't sit down yet, Sean. If you cannot sit down yet, if you knew the prices were declining and you felt sure they were going to continue to decline, would you be a seller? Go ahead and sit down. Would you be a seller if you knew prices were going to go down? Well, anybody that is, sit down.
All right, that's a resounding no.
That's a resounding no.
That's good.
Yeah. Now, thank you guys for participating.
All right.
Mr. Kittle. Yep, we're going to open with you. And I've been asked to ask you this question. So I'll own it, because I was going to ask you something very similar to it. What is the craziest thing you see within the mortgage market right now, as in, oh, here we go again?
The craziest thing going on right now, kind of deja vu all over again, is in the fraud aspect of mortgages. It is not asset verification or anything right now. It's occupancy fraud, saying that I'm occupying the property and you're really not. So we're coming back to 10 years ago. So think about that. We're putting down that I'm going to occupy the property as my primary residence. Perfect example this morning, if I can tell you, from this individual that I was out with this morning. And this is what he does for a living. Two guys buy a house, put it down as though the grandmother is buying the house, moving to Las Vegas, first flag, from Hawaii, buying a cheaper house. And that's how it was put down. It was application fraud. All right? That's what we're seeing right now. So the highest evidence of fraud is going back to occupancy fraud in a mortgage application, which had something to do with back in 2008.
Yeah.
Hey, you asked.
No, that's interesting. You know, that was one of the things. I've seen some of those reports where upwards of 50% of the new homes were being bought by people that were investors that were saying they were living in the house.
And so the grandmother was called because he is paid to investigate for the mortgage insurance companies, right, that are insuring his property. And she goes, oh, yes, you know, they're buying the house there. You're not like, oh, no, I'm so happy here in Hawaii. And was put down. And, you know, there it is. It's validation. He validates what the call was made and that there's the fraud on the loan.
Well, here's an embarrassing personal story. I'm 23 years old. I have bought a residence. I'm buying an FHA repo. And I'm signing the papers. And, I mean, it's only my second real estate deal, so I'm no paperwork expert. But I'm looking at it, and if the box is checked, I'm going to live in it. So I said to the agent, I said, I'm not going to live in it, I'm going to rent it. She said, oh, they checked the wrong box. She said, go ahead and sign it and I'll get it corrected. Well, I'm 23 years old thinking she's telling me the truth. This is, okay, I mean, for a guy that's never even seen the principal's office, this is a big deal. 60 days later, knock on the door, my wife gets read her rights by the FBI. And I'm going down to the office for, you know, going, what the heck? And they said, yeah, that's a problem. Well, turns out they were after the broker that was selling all the FHA repos instead of to owner-occupants, to investors, and telling them all the same thing. But still, I had to go see the FBI twice. So whenever anybody after that said, well, this is our policy, this is, I remember one time on a loan transaction, I was going to do it, my last 1031 exchange, I was going to get one loan in Texas. It took on and on. Finally, the application and the loan docs came back, and it was completely different than my stuff. And I said, well, that's not my stuff. He said, well, yeah, it was too confusing. You have companies and everything. We simplified it. We do that for all our clients. I said, I'll pay the taxes on the last sale. Forget it. So anyway, some of that. I guess I wanted to get this because of the last question right at the end. Do we have concern about the mortgage pools that we already have for future foreclosure problems? Because I don't, but I just want to know. Is that one of the things you kind of are thinking?
Well, the most recent mortgages, until I heard about the occupancy fraud, I thought were pretty well documented with real people's incomes, and so I don't think we have that problem. The problem that I alluded to earlier is that the LTVs on them are kind of high. So maybe the default rate won't be as bad in the next downturn, but the loss rates could be more severe because we'd go into it with very low equity.
Yeah, but why would you take a big price hit when the trustee sales are a very minor part of the market, which I think they would be. They're all fixed loans. Tons of people have equity. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate. I just don't see it.
Defaults happen when people lose their job. And so the next downturn would be a recession, I'm assuming.
Yeah,
and not a lot of people have 6 months of mortgage payments in the bank, and that's how that plays out.
Yeah,
I think John's earlier comment about, you know, the government does learn some things, you know, specifically from the 90s, they learned that we don't take back banks, and I think from this last one, they learned that we don't take back homes. Right. So I really don't think we're going to see a wave of foreclosures, and without that forced inventory onto the market, we're not going to see a big decline in prices from that, at least.
Okay. John, I'm just going to ask this one to you because of something that's always said in California that I just don't get, that builders are building something like 80,000 less homes than we need, something like that, every year. I don't get it. Is that...
They're having a tough time making money. I mean, if they'd build 80,000 more homes if they could make money doing it.
Right.
So just the land is in the outlying areas.
Okay.
The permit fees have gotten out of control. I mean, we had, 7 years of a drought, and they were forced to sandbag all around the homes in case there was rain so no nails run off into the ocean. I mean, there's all sorts of crap that they get hit with. I was in Texas this week, you know, in San Antonio, they're complaining because home prices are $240,000 now, and they're talking about how unaffordable it is. You know, I said the fees in Carlsbad are $120,000. Welcome to California.
Okay.
I mean, if we could build them for $250,000 and make money, the home builders would be building hundreds of thousands of homes in California.
But that's not going to change. That's not.
I don't see it changing.
No. Okay. What about the issue of low inventory? I'm just curious because, I mean, we hear that all the time, and yet we don't have, I don't think we have really aggressive prices, I mean, to the point where we would typically have price aggression, at least in California. I mean, when we have the charts that we're looking at, we usually have double-digit gains, and we don't. So the inventory, to me, is pretty much matched with demand, but I keep on hearing low inventory. So is there any case for that, that there's low inventory, and why it is?
Well, home prices are appreciating at about 4 times the long-term national average. The millennials, against all of the newspaper articles that you read, are actually now the driver of home purchases. They are doing what they've said. As soon as they got a job that was stable, they would get married, and then they would have babies, and then
was
they would
buy
houses.
Was that tongue-in-cheek, or I don't know?
And they move out of their parents' basement with perhaps some subsidy. That was a millennial joke.
Yep.
But they're doing that. But our evaluation of demographics is that in order just to meet the current demographic profile, we should be building about 1.5 million units per year. We're building 1.25 million. So we're at least 250,000 units less than what our view of demographics would suggest, which means if there is that level of demand and there is not that level of supply, price only has one thing to do, and that's to go up.
Okay. Another issue that I hear all the time is affordability issue. So, go ahead.
All three of these are the same issue. Mm-hmm. So, back to John, you know, we're not building enough homes. You know, it's the same issue. And, you know, in California, it's CEQA, it's Title 24, it's all these different things. You know, you want to build a new house now, you have to put in plugs that have the child protection built into the plug. And all of these things add up. And they're all good ideas, right? The road to hell is paved with good intentions. And and that's where we sit with California homes, and it's affecting the rest of the nation now, too.
Well, I was just thinking that I just mentioned the millennials. Nobody has bashed on the boomers tonight, so let me pick on pick on the boomers for just a second, and it's the same issue. It's the labor supply question, right? So just like people said millennials want to live in 300-square-foot apartments, that was not true. That's where the jobs grew first. The only place you could afford was a 300-square-foot apartment. Now that jobs have dispersed geographically, there are some places you can afford those entry-level homes. The boomers were rumored 10 years ago to be, when the kids moved out, they like to party, so they're going to sell the suburban house and move downtown and party the night away. Now, I live in Cape Coral, Florida, which our kids call God's waiting room. So you can tell they're being raised by an economist. No emotion involved. You know, right? So I can tell you the evidence of the boomers in Cape Coral. If you want a good restaurant reservation, wait till about 7:30. But what the boomers are doing, they've been saying all along, we intend to age in place. And they are doing that. And what they're doing is they're taking that $6 trillion of equity that they have, tapping some of it, and remodeling their house. If you look at the productivity of labor, it's highest in apartment buildings, it's next highest in single-family detached dwellings, and it's the lowest in remodeling. That's the most labor-intensive. So they're part of the problem for the builders to build new homes, that they're attracting labor away into the remodeling space. So it's, again, a demographic profile, but it's all the same issue. The whole thing's all the same issue.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something.
May I?
Yes, you may.
Are you a boomer?
Hello. So I'll validate that. So I have four millennials, 37 to 23, two boys, two girls, right? It goes girl, boy, girl, boy. Both the girls own homes. They're married. Both the boys, I don't know what the hell they're doing. Right? They're not married, you know, but they both have jobs. Both have jobs. And all four have graduated from college. How about that? All right? Four colleges, two weddings, and I'm broke and I don't have any money to invest in.
Looking for a government job.
I'm looking for a government job, though. I need a retirement plan. You have anything at Fannie Mae?
I don't know. I'll see your credentials.
Oh, okay. But Whitney, my oldest, right, just 37, on the cusp of being that, to Doug's point, just remodeled her home. No children. Her and her husband, great incomes. They travel. Paige, my youngest daughter, both the girls, she lives in Hawaii, all right? Owns a home in Hawaii, for goodness sake. Off the charts what it cost. However, probably doesn't plan to have any children at this time. So they are into themselves, which is what millennials are into, right? I mean, they really are. That's what they're in. They're into themselves and traveling and not having, and I mean, it's a perfect example of what Doug just said.
I can't resist. There's a song called Gotta Love Millennials. It's hilarious. I look at it at least once a week just to put a smile on my face. I do. What constitutes a bigger affordability problem? Because whenever I hear affordability, I hear the word crisis. And when it's exaggerated like that, it's bothersome because then there's sometimes actions taken. So first of all, do we have the biggest affordability problem for the owner or the renter? And first of all, let's figure out which one of those have the biggest issue, because my concern is some of the solutions, if it's one or the other, might be unpleasant for people that own rentals. So John, you're just sitting there.
They're different problems. In the rental space, in the apartment building world, there are some markets now that have probably excess supply, but they're all A-level quality properties.
Right.
So nobody's building C-level or what were the most affordable.
Give them
apartments.
Time. It'll turn into a C.
Well, that's exactly right. That is why you see Fannie Mae focusing on credit characteristics. I agree with you. And so that's what it does, is it impedes the ability to save money to buy a house. But then builders are not able to build entry-level houses. So you kind of have a circular problem.
Yeah, and I'll answer the payments and property taxes, everything as a percentage of people's income is not at an all-time high, but the rents as a percentage of people's income is. So
okay.
I think that probably answers your question.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a friend that's got about 1,000 rentals. He doesn't own 1,000 rentals. He owns a management company in Riverside. He said the rents are unbelievable. And he is managing one property I have in Riverside. I thought $1,300 was the rent. He rented it for $1,900.
Is now a good time to give you my solution?
Yeah, let's do it. I got five of them. Let's see one of them if it's here.
Okay. So if I stood up here when he started this 10 years ago and I said there'd be 1 million people staying in strangers' houses tonight, you would have said I'm an idiot, right? But that's what's going on with Airbnb. So the world has adopted this as an okay thing to do. We're entering into a world where 3.5 million people per year are retiring, and most of them need an extra $800 in income, and they have their mortgage paid off and have 2 to 3 empty bedrooms. And you've got a lot of people paying $1,500 a month in rent who would rather pay $800, willing to do some chores. I mean, heck, if I'm a single parent and the retiree's going to stay at home in the afternoon with my child, that's a win-win. I think some of the household formation numbers and some of the construction you talked about is going to be less than that, because some of the demand is going to be satisfied by that supply.
Do you see an opening there for Zillow?
I tried to talk Airbnb into doing it, and they're going after the apartment guys instead, but I think it's a big opportunity.
Airbnb is a competitor that we consider them a competitor now.
Though. Okay.
I mean, we watch them closely.
But do you have that same product?
We do not.
You do not, okay.
Not short term.
Okay. I guess I'm concerned about rent control.
Yeah, I don't know where I saw this, but I just saw, doing some reading this week, that 60% of Californians now favor the idea of rent control. Was that, that wasn't your stat, John?
I read that. Yeah?
I wish I could quote, I wish I could quote where it's from, but yeah. I will look for it and send it to Bruce, and he'll post it somewhere.
80% of Californians don't even know what it is, though. So,
yeah.
I was really curious how easy that is to pass somewhere that it isn't. I know you have pockets where it already is, L.A. and some other places, but
just yesterday we had Senate Bill 2 go through, which adds a $75
yes.
recording fee. Not go through, but it. It finally made it through the assembly, so now it looks like it'll probably happen.
I don't recall voting for that.
Yeah. But, it's this.
That's for affordability.
Most of the mantra right now is we're going to solve affordability by adding fees to housing.
Okay. Would there be, from the builder world, is there a more density that might be possible or allowed?
Oh, I think there's a lot more density coming. But actually, when I got into this business, and you remember this too, the cities wanted less density. Now the cities are pushing for even more than the builders want to do. They've completely reversed on this. And I think the disruption of retail that's going on, and then you start throwing in ride sharing and stuff, a lot of these parking lots are going to become unnecessary eventually, and you're going to see some land in good locations get redeveloped into mostly rental housing. And we coined a term for this because we're seeing it in the suburbs now, where the suburbs are saying, bring some of that urban to my area. We trademarked the term Surban for it. But we're doing a lot of feasibilities on Surban development all over the country. And if you throw in parking lots not being necessary, what a great opportunity.
Yeah, I read that report that one of your guys wrote. That was interesting. Talk a little bit about homeownership. I mean, it's down from the peak. I guess we can agree it shouldn't have been there in the first place, but there's a lot of people now that are renters that used to be owners. And you made a quote that I like. It says, ownership has clearly declined in importance. So I guess my first question, is that in the eyes of the would-be buyer, or is it in the policymakers where they go, we just don't care if that many percent own anymore? So
I think the policymakers care. I think the consumer doesn't. I can't remember the last time we ran a focus group where entry-level buyers were saying, I'm buying for the interest deduction. But that was the case in the 1980s, right? And the house is a piggy bank notion. I think people do have memories that's not necessarily the case. And we in the book that we did, we drew a lot of parallels between those born in the 1990s and those born in the 1930s. As kids, they saw the Great Depression and one saw the Great Recession. And, you know, Warren Buffett's generation was extremely afraid of debt. This generation is extremely afraid of debt, and you can ask any banker, they're not using credit cards or using debit cards. And I think if you're afraid of debt and you don't have 6 months of savings in the bank, a greater percentage are just not going to make that leap into home ownership, regardless of the fact that I'm spewing a lot of my money into rent. I mean, you really can't buy a home and have your payment go down. That's not the math in California right now either. So that's why I'm very convinced one of the reasons home ownership is going to fall.
Sarah Zillow does a lot of research on why people buy stuff, right? Why they go to the website, why they buy. What's your feeling about why people make the buying decision, I guess?
Gosh, these guys are probably better to ask that question than me. I'm just the advertising person up here.
You can pass. It's okay.
Your business is worth $7 billion and mine is not. So
there's that.
No, that's okay. So so why do people, what's any response? Why are people buying? I mean, I can tell you why I own, and I knew for sure when I wrote that report called The California Crash, I really thought prices would go down by half. Did I sell my residence? No. It went from $1.2 million to $600,000. And the reason I kept it was because of a phone call I made trying to be a renter. I called a guy that had a really cool house. I said, I'm not your typical renter. I'll pay a year in advance. He said, everything sounds great. He says, can I ask you a question? And he said, do you have a pet? And the second he asked that question, I knew I couldn't be a renter, because I don't want anybody ever to get to ask me that again. And it was worth $600,000 to say, I'm so glad you asked the question. So that's why I found I owned, I wanted control. And I think, I don't know, I don't want that to be not part of America, to be honest with you. It bothers me that we're not thinking. I think there's some negative ramifications.
The Norris Group would like to thank the following gold partners. First Lending Solutions, Guaranteed Rate and Nathan Chiboya, In a Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keller Williams Corona, Keystone CPA, LA South RIA, Michael Ryan, New Western, North San Diego Real Estate Investors, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Investment Club, Pacific Premier Bank, Pasadena Phoebe, Pilot Limousine, Real Wealth Network, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, the San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, San Francisco Bay Real Estate Networking Summit, Sunoco, South Orange County Real Estate Club, Spinnaker Loans, Think Realty, You Direct IRA Services, Westin South Coast Plaza, Wilson Investment Properties, Inc. See iSurvivedRealEstate.com for event information.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.